This is part two of our recording session with legendary hip-hop producer Cranberry Dave and Bat Eater Music, this podcast's very first guests. In this episode, the crew talks about what Ye has been up to since episode one of the new Void Gazers podcast and the Will Smith slap heard around the world. Stick around until the end to hear about our new voicemail line.
He did Hamilton, came back and hit us with a two-pack of spooky.
I know, man, but I'm so fucking disenchanted right now with, like, the world and watching him go do snow. It's weird. Snowpiercer is, like, my favorite movie. It's based off of a really good French comic. And to watch, like, one of my favorite rappers be, like, the main character of a Snowpiercer adaptation, and it sucks, and because of the coronavirus, it takes too long to make the episodes, and they've been stuck in, like, season two production for 2 years, and he seems incapable of doing other stuff. It probably is contracted.
David fucking made the first two clipping albums while delivering pizza every fucking day. Like, if anybody on this planet who has, like, a tiny bit of passion could make an amazing rap album while also doing a side gig, it's that motherfucker right there.
Right, it's just contracts. Like, I don't know, we just don't know if he's allowed to do both. The timing of when he started the show and was right after he dropped the new album. And
oh, you may be onto something. You may be right.
He just hasn't done anything since. So, like, maybe he can't? I don't know. It's the longest musical drought I've seen from David since I got into the Get Back in 2015. I don't know if you know what the Get Back is.
No, these are just small things to a giant like me. That's all I'm saying here. I got a tattoo. You think I don't know the discography? Right. I'm not that retarded.
Right, I got you.
Well, see, and that's what I want to talk about, that because David Diggs, what I've learned from him more than anything is, like, the power of predictive force in your rap. That, like, there's a lot of rappers who are, you know, they're putting what they want their life to be into the bars. But David did it in such a particular way where he's talking about this Tony he's pursuing in a song that had, like, when I discovered clipping, he had no views. Like, the David videos had, like, 1,000 views each. The clipping videos had, like, 1,000 views each. That first clipping live performance, you can still find on their channel, still probably only has, like, a couple thousand views.
There was, like, two people in that audience, too.
You remember that? I'm pretty sure one of them's his girlfriend, and the others are her friends. Like, just going by the vibe. Because she knew
it looked like it was shot in the wear room of a fucking bowling alley.
Some Ralph Amell shit.
But the whole thing, like, if you watch that show, and we watched it on acid, I think, one of the first times you were over.
Sounds like me.
He keeps talking about, like, the experience as though he knows, like, exactly that this band is going to blow up and this is going to be their, like, underground video that the people in the know got to see. Like, it's addressed that way in it. It's so weird that, like, if he hadn't blown up, it wouldn't have made any sense. But he knew he was going to because he knew Hamilton was going to be a hit. And so his whole rap career, everything he did as David Diggs and as clipping, he knew he was doing with the anticipation of possibly winning a Tony for his Hamilton performance that no one knew he was working on, outside of people who were super in the know.
You know who we can thank for all of this? Watsky. I hate white rappers, but he's one of the ones who gets it. His whole career is about passing the torch off, and as his last few albums have indicated, he's stopped trying to rap because he doesn't want to be the pale kid who raps fast, and he wants to instead put people on, like the Exquisite Corpse song, which puts on Rafael Casal and David Diggs. Are you aware of Kil Rogers being Rafael Casal? Because Trixie didn't know that, Bad Eater.
Oh.
That was like a thing she found out at one point.
No, well, I'll tell you real quick. Fucking Watsky can suck the skin off my dick. I'll tell you that fucking now. Because every girl I talked to in high school, whenever I was like, yeah, I'm a rapper, they're like, oh my God, this is my favorite rap song. And they'd pull up Watsky and try and get me to rap fast at lunch. So fuck that guy.
He agrees with you, though.
That's incredible.
If that helps
funny.
At all. He also says, fuck that guy. He did a whole album about how his 20s were supposed to be a pursuit of art, but were instead a commercialized pursuit of, like, you know, bullshit communism stuff. But then he talks about, like, his impact on the rap game and how, like, he compares himself to Iggy Azalea and all these fucking, like, people who
came
out to
just culture
vulture.
Yeah, but here's the fucking thing with that. If my friend comes over to my apartment, borrows my car, crashes my car, and goes, yeah, I am an asshole, I wouldn't be like, you know what? We agree. That makes this
better.
Well,
he didn't crash your car, though. Like, it's more like
emotionally, he did.
Well, you seem mad at the type of people who are like, yeah, this is my favorite. You should rap like this. And I'm just saying, he's also mad at the type of people who look at his content. Right. People look at his content and go, yeah, this is rapping. And he's like, well, no, that was me doing like a thing I was doing. Hip hop music is better than this. It's just that he did a lot of heavy lifting in putting on David Diggs to more people, specifically Lin-Manuel Miranda, who is like the guy who reviews Watsky's book when it came out and shit. Like they were friends through like poetry and art.
I know that like Lin-Manuel and David were both in this like hip hop group in New York that did like
the Hamilton mixtape's incredible. Yeah, it's obvious that Lin-Manuel was like trying to be a rapper and that wasn't working. Because he, you know,
have you seen him on The Electric Company in the early 2000s? I'll pull up on your
hose. Like, I can't imagine him trying to rap anything modern at fucking all.
Yeah, it'd be weird, right?
Right. Like him trying to do a Future impression.
He's got a fucking Nas feature and a Royce feature. What? Because of the Hamilton mixtape.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Like, okay.
Isn't that crazy? Like, yeah, you just have to find your lane. And if your lane is like rapping about history books.
But Nas will do anything for $50,000. That's, I promise. Yeah. I promise you. He will do anything you ask him to do for $50,000.
Dude, Snoop Dogg was doing 10K features like 2 years ago and now owns Def Jam. I'm fucking reeling. Like,
I thought he owned Death Row. Wasn't it Death Row?
Yeah, Death Row. Did you buy Death Row or Def Jam?
Dave? I think it's Death Row.
Death Row. I remember rejoicing because my Death Row shirt was not ironic. It was relevant for a real reason again.
When we met Spice One, Spice and Snoop had a song coming out like 2 weeks later. And man, I hope Spice has some kind of bounce back with all this like OGs are bouncing back because he's really one of the only like OGs left. I guess I'm still, this is still like an extension of the Eminem conversation.
Before we jump on anything else, I want to make this quick distinction because a lot of people, whenever they bring up OGs or specifically white rapper OGs, they never bring up my boy Aesop Rock, who...
Oh, bars.
I'm telling you right now, I am starstruck being in the same fucking Discord chat with Trixie. If I met Aesop Rock, I would probably blow him. Like, his music has meant so fucking much to me throughout my entire life. And like, I wanted to bring him up when we were talking about Eminem not having content or whatever, which isn't my total point, but that's just like the bite side. Either way, I just feel like it's the same way if I were to look at someone like Polo G or Rod or whatever and say like, they're not great at rapping, they should be more like Eminem, would be as retarded to me as saying like Eminem should have content like Aesop Rock.
Right.
But that's like a rapper to me that is just pure content where you can spend a week on every line that he wrote and just because the way he writes it, this is really fascinating. He fucking, every single line is a very, very personal thing about his life that he obfuscates two or three times rewriting it to make it harder to decipher. I fucking love that concept. And
images I don't associate with my awareness anymore, but I've recently been daring to explore instead of bury. He gets a little bit more direct on more recent albums, sure, too.
Oh, especially The Impossible Kid. The Impossible Kid was just such a fucking, like, this is me.
A song
like, this
Brothers, that was an emotional Blood
Sandwich.
One.
Blood he's, Sandwich.
I think he's like the master of having those tracks that like, if you have a memory that you like can relate to the thing he's talking about, then it's like the most powerful, you know, like way it could be put forward. And storytelling wise, TV on 10 from The Uncluded is my favorite rap verse ever.
The Uncluded is so fucking good. Mint was nice. Reviewing Juno and Kimya Dawson started singing and I went, what the fuck? Right, this is that person.
Yep.
Oh yeah, the Moldy Peaches.
She has 8,000 subs, dude, because the Moldy Peaches don't exist now. She uploads covers to 8,000 subs on YouTube and gets like 400 views. It's fucking sad. It's a shame.
But that's the fucking thing about Aesop Rock. Again, total blow the guy material.
Yeah.
He fucking...
Hey, me too. Rhyme Sayers are all amazing. I'm so glad he joined up with them.
So I... One of the mixtapes that I had made a while back, I did what Aesop did in a sense where I live in Texas, right? And I purposely threw all caution to the wind, moved up to middle of nowhere, Colorado for 3 or 4 months because it was around the pandemic and I didn't have any attachments where I was. So I was like, cool, let me just do this. So I hit up someone on like Roomster, lived with them for 3 or 4 months, just got high, saved up my money beforehand, paid off those 4 months rent, and just made a tape, like, while I was there, just in a new environment, doing everything. And, like, for an artist to do that, and for you to hear about them doing that, and for you to go, yeah, I'm going to put this as a chapter in my life where I'm going to try that, that's a fucking really, either I'm retarded or that's important.
No, you're a genius. I did it with the Reznor method. I didn't get to go to the Tate House, but me and some roommates in high school rented like a really, well, right after high school, rented a really shitty place so that we could live in like despair and listen to Nine Inch Nails.
I feel that.
Like, it made the downward spiral really important to me.
There's a part of me that thinks that if you're going to be creative and do something in this kind of creative medium, you have to just not be yourself while you're doing it in a weird way. Like, obviously you can do the Vanilla Ice kind of thing where you adopt an entirely different personality. But if you force this change around you, it becomes a lot easier to look at everything through a new perspective. It almost feels like you're writing with somebody else's hand. It's really important that you just do something fucking stupid, put yourself in a spot that you can get out of, by the way. Don't ruin your life over here. Like, put yourself $400,000 in debt, like that one fucking Mr. or whatever. What was his name? Original. You know what I'm talking about? That track?
Oh, yeah. Uncle Adams.
Uncle Adams put himself.
I showed you this awful video.
Uncle Adams put himself in $400,000 worth of debt so he could get 1 million listeners a month on Spotify. He has a show called At Least a Million where he doesn't take my advice at fucking all. Where he just goes, "All right, boys, let's take everything I built in my 34 years of life, throw it into the wind," and now he fucking, what was it? He would buy shit from like pawn shops so that he could like flip them on the internet or something to sustain this like delusion he currently has. Either way, move to the fucking woods, make something. It's not going to be great, it's not going to be a masterpiece, but whenever you get back to where you are currently, you're going to make shit completely differently. It's going to kickstart your shit a little bit harder.
Yeah, that's my dude. The Virginia House even served a bit of that purpose. Like, it was a meme. So like, as soon as we moved there, like, Trixie's life fell apart. And then we were all like, well, what do we do now? Let's just like shitpost IRL. I'm a big fan of being cringy and unreasonable. Okay, there's a couple reasons why, right? There's the Donald Glover inspiration. There's the Hunter S. Thompson, where he's straight out, yeah, Kanye. Well, Donald Glover's very much like the first son of Kanye West to me. Like, his whole creative roots and the way he views things. Which is, yeah, like, you can kind of trip in public and people will laugh at you, but then they'll talk about it. With Hunter S. Thompson, he says to just act crazy first because you can always appear normal later.
Well, that's Norm MacDonald's whole ethos.
Yeah, that's a good pull, too.
Like, Norm MacDonald always said, no one ever wants to talk to the smartest guy in the room.
Yeah, dude. There's so many people who seem to get that they are jesters. And we talked a little bit about this when we were hanging out. But entertainment is meant to entertain you, not to educate you or to, like, really question you. Maybe you, if you're really good at entertainment, you can start to question philosophy. But nowadays, everybody starts with the question about philosophy and then they pull the camera out. And everything sucks.
I think they get points for trying with the philosophy stuff.
It sucks. You guys were talking earlier. Trixie mentioned earlier about how, like, she's into niche things and she doesn't have a lot of hobbies because she, you know, you work in entertainment. Your entertainment tends to be wrapped up into what you do. I can't, like, talk about the Twilight Zone because everybody hates the version of it they think they know about. And nobody knows about the real one. And anybody who knows about the real one missed the point of it or doing, like, a parody of it. Yeah, like, you look at the Twilight Zone reboot, and it feels like it's a mockumentary, like, parody.
I haven't seen one fucking second of that thing. I used to get high out of my goddamn mind and go through anxiety attacks watching the original.
Yes, a man of culture. You take a tab of acid and watch a season of that show, and you leave it like, what the fuck is anything?
I know what I'm doing tonight.
I think you'd be surprised how many people are out there waiting for proper Twilight Zone.
Someone
analysis.
To actually fucking talk about it.
Endless Jest used to, he touched on it a few times in a couple videos because was like, it is the greatest show ever made.
Well, it's like clearly the imprint for modern television, but the only person who's ever gotten close to doing it right was Charlie Brooker trying to do Twilight Zone as Black Mirror. I think you could take every lesson that he put into that and make like a good reboot of fucking, what was that Will Robinson, Danger Will Robinson thing, Lost in Space. They did a reboot of that, but it's like really bland because it doesn't have any of the human elements that I think Rod Serling helped bring to sci-fi, or like bring out of sci-fi as a book genre. The guy who wrote the book on The Twilight Zone, the guy who, you know, the guy who wrote the book on it, his name is Mark Zickrey. He goes by Mr. Sci-Fi. He's like alive right now, but again, he has like 70k subs on YouTube, gets like 4,000 views a video. Nobody cares about him. They didn't consult him when they made the reboot. But he's like a living expert who is friends with Rod's wife, who knew Ray Bradbury, who was part of like knows all the producers and the writers before they died. And this guy doesn't even get asked about his opinions. So that's like why things suck now. I don't think it's that they think they're trying, Dave. I think it's that they're not even trying to do what worked in the past.
That makes sense.
I mean, it's ego, right? Like, I can do a new thing.
No, it's not even that. It's, again, like, to quote Benson Shapiro over here, don't attribute to malice what you can attribute to incompetence. I think that it's not necessarily that they're not trying or they just kind of grab it. Like, it's a very, very fucking heavy IP that they're dealing with anytime they grab something like that. I think it's the same way, right? You understand Eminem a lot fucking more than I do, and I dislike him, right? Let's say sure. I had enough like for him that I would try and make an Eminem-inspired album. If me and you went back-to-back on that one, you would fucking hit that nail right dead center. I'd probably smack the wood a couple of times before you found one good track. You look at these people, that's like, they grew up with it. They obviously know about it enough to put something out there, but maybe they're looking at it like, well, we have to update it to modern times. Like, we should tell this kind of story. And also just the general talent pool that you have now. You don't have a fucking Rod Serling now, like at all. You're never going to have another Rod Serling. That
sure fucking is true.
And he wrote most of them. He didn't even want to narrate. He wanted to just be a writer, and they couldn't get the narrator that they were supposed to have. So first episode, he just picked up the bat and went out there and knocked right the fuck out the park.
Yeah, he hates public speaking. I've seen all of his talks, and there's only like 13 of them.
I would blow that guy too. We're doing a list of people I would blow, and I'm doing it in Bird's truck. Bird hasn't talked recently, and I just want to get him in on this.
Well, hey, as long as you're blowing me too.
Trixie?
No. And absolutely not.
Are you guys in an open relationship? No, like, did you see Destiny and Melina close their relationship? Congrats.
Oh, good for them.
Quid pro quo.
My girlfriend is going to whoop my ass when she gets home. She's like, I listened to that little podcast interview thing you did. And I'm like, yeah, sweetheart. You know, it's like, you're going to be blowing motherfucker.
I didn't know you were gay for all these dead men.
Well, she knows.
Women.
She knows now.
Let's talk about someone that I have come dangerously close to dick sucking in the past, but fortunately I've been measured by J. Cole to not idolize Kanye, because there's this fun little J. Cole arc, if you're a J. Cole fan, where you can see him going from idolizing Kanye to making a song, False Prophets, that basically is a diss track, to No Role Models, which is just like lying and saying that he has no role models and he's here right now. But he did have a role model, and it was Kanye. But Kanye, when he started being crazy, J. Cole like pretty much denounced him lyrically.
You are not my father anymore.
It's really interesting. You know, he's just pointing out, like, everybody is not saying this. Why is everybody not saying that this dude is crazy? Like, why aren't we talking about it? Of course, I think being crazy is the strength Kanye brings, but it was nice to have one other famous person saying, like, maybe we shouldn't support my beautiful, dark, and twisted fantasy as a literal lifestyle choice.
I mean, I don't know how you could. So I love Kanye more than I would love any manifestation of God, right? But seeing him just in absolute tears and shambles, wearing a bulletproof vest, screaming at a room of black people, it's really difficult to not, like, contextualize that and go, what is happening? What are we fucking doing right now? Regardless if you agree or disagree with him, just, he's a great visionary, pretty bad at current day optics.
The Donda stem player is amazing, dude. But the Donda press circuit wasn't.
I got to touch it when you came over here.
Yeah, that's right. I'm glad I had it.
Yeah, you pulled it out and I was like, man, I really want to touch it. I mentioned,
you didn't
want
to play with it though. You just wanted to touch it.
Because, like, you motherfuckers, episode 2, whenever you guys went all the way down, yay, because first episode was Pokemon, second one's yay, this is my new dick show. I'm following every episode.
All the way around. But you're close.
Either way, I'm definitely going to come to one of your fucking, like, little parties you throw. I'm going to knock on your tent when it's 2 o'clock in the morning. That's the fan I'm going to be. But whenever you talked about it, you kept bringing up like the fleshy skin, and then you came over to my apartment and I was like, dude, break it out. Come on. I want to touch the skin. And then you brought it out and I touched the skin. And you're like, hey, do you want to listen to it? I was like, nah, I'm good. That was all I wanted.
I don't use it at all. It just sits in a box on my counter. The idea of the Sim Player is revolutionary, and in our next album production cycle for Sucker Punch, we're going to be like using it to produce, I think. Like, you know, yes. Like rap on and stuff. We can put the stems on there and then walk around the house rapping shit and playing with the Sim Player. And I think it'll be great for the creative energy of it all. Yay is in a down bad spiral, as we established on that first episode. Trixie, do you want to quickly reiterate for potential first time listeners what a down bad spiral is? Because you've coined it.
The down bad spiral is what happens when you lose your girlfriend and you can't handle it. And you go on an absolute tirade against her new boyfriend, in this case, Pete Davidson, and just kind of blow up and lose your mind in public in a way that makes everybody look really bad.
So the news that we have to talk about, the update, is, of course, that Ye has been disallowed from the Grammys. Well, no, not yet.
Not yet.
That happened at the Oscars, but let's talk about the Grammys first, because they put out an excuse today as to why they have banned Ye. And they have at least given us an answer, unlike how Twitch does when they ban people. They said it was for his online behavior.
His online behavior?
One of the sites here in the article is that it's about him posting graphic images of Pete Davidson being kidnapped and buried, which, if I recall, is the music video, is what they're talking about.
A little claymation guy who may or may not resemble Pete Davidson.
An artist who is nominated this year for 5 Grammys, including Album of the Year for Donda, is not allowed to go because of a music video from one of the nominated projects. Let's think about that and talk about it out loud. That's really fucking weird, right?
Let me get some of that hot Trixie analytical take. Hit me.
Yeah, Trixie, what the fuck?
So wait, you're saying he is nominated, but he's not allowed to be there.
He's nominated for 5 Grammys. He's won 22 of them. He pissed in a Grammy on Twitter 2 years ago. He's not allowed because of his online behavior.
I mostly just don't understand why they're nominating him. Like, I get for not money. Wanting him to be at the show. I don't get making the show about him and then not letting him be at the show.
What do you mean? It's they get to use his name for 5 different awards.
Yeah, it's you know there ought to be a way to say to the award ceremony, keep my name out your fucking mouth. You know,
keep my songs out your fucking mouth.
For real, you actually have to submit your albums. That was the whole thing with one of Drake's album rollouts. Is he didn't submit any of his albums for the Grammys.
Well, his people submit the stuff, right? And then they'll take it. They'll accept the submission. That's the interesting part. Yeah, why not cancel him for the award if you're going to cancel him from being there? What if he wins Album of the Year?
That'd be awkward.
Well, also, like, how how early in advance do they get around to deciding what the fuck's going to win? Like, obviously, it's not the night before. But let's say, right, a couple months before, they decide, okay, this is our album pool. They have a roundtable discussion. They go, okay, I think this one wins because X, Y, and Z, right? Well, you get to a point where the artist that created it is no longer allowed there. How much have you paid for graphics? How much have you paid for, you know, licensing or just what the fuck ever? So how much have you sunk into it? And I'm curious to see if they would nominate something he makes in the future. Because I think this could be a case of this is your send-off. Like,
you get it.
Like, we're taking it here, but we're not going to fuck with you in the future, maybe.
Right, that's my take on what happened with Will in the Oscars, is that he's not going to be as gracefully invited back because he refused to leave. We'll talk about that in a second. But I guess, yeah, we all kind of agree that the Grammys are a meme. This is a weird, I've never seen this before, though. Like, an artist who is nominated for Album of the Year not be allowed. Because Will Smith won his award, and people are like, well, maybe he shouldn't win it because he assaulted someone. But, like, what if Will Smith wasn't invited?
That's a different thing. Yeah.
Would he be allowed to win then? It's very interesting.
I'm just wondering, like, if he wins, are they gonna let him do the, like, Skype call-in thing? Like, except from a distance? Like, is it just a physical presence problem?
He seems to be planning some concert that night.
I mean, that's smart on his part.
That's the thing, too, is the only way they could pull that fucking shit off is if they get, like, a pre-recorded message from 3 weeks before. Because there's no fucking way he's going to hop on Skype. He's not going to do it
now, yeah.
No, if he hops on Skype, he's going to be like, here's a list of all the white people that made it difficult for me to get, and just go down fucking everybody.
Yeah.
Yo, the Grammys is literally happening in a minute.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Tonight. No way.
Yeah. As Roy said, welcome to the Grammys where your likeness is used for promo, hypeness, and views. Okay, I hope that you know him, that if you voted, you might as well have not voted for no one. They knew when they made the category where the trophy was going. This industry shit is dumb.
Remember Will Smith won the first Grammy and they ain't even recognized Hove until Annie. So I don't tap dance for these crackers and sing Mammy.
Will Smith don't got a cuss in his raps to sell records.
Bars!
I think we have to censor that word on YouTube, don't we? I've had a video taken down cracker.
Actually, yeah, rewind that and say it with like a N-word. Say C-word. That'd be funny.
Well, I am black, so it's going to be a little bit difficult for y'all to clear it, but I'll say it a little bit quieter next time. You don't know I'm not black, Trixie. Wait, have you seen the music video?
I wasn't laughing because you said you were black, but
You don't know I'm not black. You haven't seen the music video yet. Yeah, I'm working on it. I'm being a perfectionist. All right, let's move into Will Smith from the Grammys to the Oscars. Bird, you haven't talked in a while, but this is the kind of thing I think you would have kept up with. What do you think of...
But I saw a video where Will Smith was the fish Oscar from Shark Tale, and he slapped Marty from Madagascar, you know, the zebra.
That's a good meme.
It was pretty good. It was
Did you see any of Lofty's memes on Twitter?
No.
Lofty Pixels.
No, I didn't.
I recommend everyone follow at Lofty Pixels on Twitter for meme supercuts anytime anything interesting happens.
Make sure you also follow I Look Terrible Too. That's a cool guy, Clit Obliterator, good buddy of mine. Yeah, he's a good guy.
Twitter.com/Dave Cranberry.
Well, we don't need to go all plugging.
Everyone's following Will Smith because he's one of the most successful. Well, he won a Grammy. God damn it. Fuck,
did he only win
fucking
one?
Will Smith.
He was the best paid actor in the world for like a decade.
Yeah, he's kind of the top of the barrel, right?
You can watch a great, I mean, you can see the not only the end of the period of his height, but also a great recap of how height he was in YMS's After Earth videos.
Those
videos are a phenomenal peek into his psyche in general, his relationship with his family, just the whole way that he is as a person, which I have a lot of sympathy for. And I think he's, you know, deeply charismatic and...
Yeah, you're both charismatic narcissists.
Right, but like, you know, when you're slapping someone in the face on stage, it's going to make... I think for Will Smith, I think this is going to probably put him into, like, deep therapy. Because I don't know if he's somebody who would have done that yet.
You're right. You are right, actually.
This is the first time I've heard a take that maybe Will Smith was hurt by this. Go ahead.
Well, and Chris Rock clearly.
He certainly was, because like that's why all those people were coming up to him to fucking, you know, to
comfort him afterwards. He slapped a man and started crying. Of course he would go to therapy. I didn't even think of that.
Well, you have to realize that. So Will Smith is a guy who has all he's ever done. There's a great like 17-minute video pouring over the details of this from a film channel called Deep Focus Lens that I follow. And she was really analyzing it from the perspective of like them as actors and how like this is obviously not staged for this and that reasons and like going into like the performance that they do give, because they are still acting regardless of whether it's staged. They're actors on a stage.
Correct.
And so she breaks down the performance in a way that's really interesting, because it's framing, you know, who Will Smith is. We've all watched him for like 25 years now, basically grow up. He was probably like 18 when he got started working on, on Fresh Prince, right? He was really
like 16,
young.
17, I think.
And
first things first, rest in peace, Uncle Phil.
I've seen documentaries on him from way back, showing how he would memorize the whole script of each episode. And you can see him like mouthing other people's lines while they're talking and stuff in certain edits. Like, he's extremely hyper dedicated to being the best, most likable, most beloved person he possibly could, you know, and having the most beloved family on earth. But like,
his wife really isn't that likable.
It's not just
his wife really isn't. I mean, it's mostly that, Trixie. No, she hates him. She goes on podcasts and baits him into talking about how he comes and then vomits.
The problem every is time that he comes. He's trying to.
Hey, I did that with my first girlfriend. You should leave her.
I think you should. I think the problem is that that Will Smith is trying to build the life of his dreams with a person who is not, who doesn't fit that picture. You know, like he wants the he wants his family to be this extreme picturesque idea of a family that he has in his mind,
yeah,
of like the ultimate American, you know, idol family of like all, everyone here is amazing and perfect, and we you all have what, this bro? Great relationship.
But you can't whatever be perfect that means. With alopecia.
No, he needs to watch his own movies because in I Am Legend and in Pursuit of Happiness, there's no bitch involved. Like if he just watched his movies, he'd be like, oh yeah, I just need Jaden. Just me and Jaden. We're the homies.
They tried that and After Earth did not work.
I guess you're right.
I wanted to point out one thing. Whenever I was watching him make that walk all the way up to Chris Rock, it was impossible to kind of go off what Trixie was saying. I'm going to look at this from a little bit of a different angle. I'm going to put myself in Will's shoes. So it's Bad Eater sitting in the chair, Ben Saint up on the podium talking shit about my beautiful wife. I'm walking up. I'm getting up there.
Why would Ben Saint be talking shit about your wife?
I'm moonwalking up to Ben Saint, right? I'm about to slap that beautiful liberal blue hair right off of his balding head. I get in my chair.
Beating in the hair piece.
I get in my chair. I look up at him and I say to him, don't you ever fucking interrupt best guy ever during your sonnet you fucking panel ever again in your fucking life. And that's what I was thinking whenever I saw absolute lunatic Will Smith walk up to Chris Rock and strike him physically. Whenever I saw American Psycho Will Smith assault this poor autistic black man on screen, I couldn't stop myself from seeing myself in his position, and I can't hate him for it.
Will Smith's slap was so pussy, though.
It wasn't a good slap. His wrist buckles real
his
quick.
His wrist was like...
So Mint and I were watching it.
No, he didn't. He had theater kid form. I've been fighting my whole...
He's an actor trying to trick you into thinking
you
has
guys are watching
form.
It from the perspectives of, like, the emotionality of the performance or putting yourself in the shoe. Mint was watching it like, I would have punched him in the face. What's this fucking slapping thing?
His elbow was next to his torso when he delivered that slap. So it looked like one of those prissy-ass slaps. And it's like, what the... Why the... Okay, this is all performance. Fucking...
I took it as, like, a challenge to a duel. Type of slap, like
yeah, it was really a slap with the white glove type slap. No, the fucking thing that was wrong about it. So first of all, he holds the finish, which if it's ever going to be proper form, it has to reset to block just every fucking time. Anytime you're doing anything like boxing, kickboxing, right? So that just teed me off immediately. This motherfucker thinks he's in a scene. He thinks it's cut after he lands a strike.
I was just thinking about the pictures I saw on Twitter where they like they drew the lines to show how like, you know, like just how slick it looks where his suit is like, you know, at that just
very
right
theatric
angle to the
slap.
Arm.
It looks great. It
just looks good.
That's why it's so good with the memes, because right on the moment of contact when you cut away to like the joke, it's perfect. Like Bad Eater was saying, it's like he's performing for a cut.
Well, that's the thing, too. He was in fucking Muhammad. He knows how to box.
Yeah, he was like that could be part of it, right? A bad slap because he doesn't want to get in trouble for knocking out Chris Rock. Maybe he can punch. I mean, he's also Will Smith. He's from Philly. Like the thing about Chris Rock in this altercation is you see him tighten up his fist, pull it about 6 inches away from his waist, and then loosen his shoulder and not punch Will. But it looks like Chris is going to punch back. People see the show, Everybody Hates Chris, and they think that Chris Rock is like a little autistic black kid, but he's got 8 brothers and he grew up in Bed-Stuy. Like, he can fight.
No, he's literally autistic.
I know, but he can
he's
fight.
On the spectrum.
Like, he's not like an innocent, like a...
I can fight too, and I'm autistic. That's not a part of it. It's the fact that this is a victim.
I would argue that autism makes
Bird,
you
Bird, don't you fucking fight. Talk to me about fighting. Me and Riley have been trying to set something up, and
yeah,
we're about
Bird,
to spring it on you soon.
Or you and Bad Eater are going to have a fight on our card.
Oh, no.
There needs to be,
we're
like,
both
a
like
whole... You're like the same height and weight. It'd be funny.
Start training. Do you know how to stuff a double leg?
It'd be funny.
Look, he just does a little bit of kickboxing and Muay Thai. It is nothing that you can't deal with. You cook. Just use your cooking, like in Hunter Hunter.
Just use a frying pan, like Princess Peach.
Do I get a pan?
Use your cooking, like in Hunter Hunter.
Do I get a pan or a knife?
Yeah, fuck it. Whatever. If you can get it, if you can get it past like the athletic commission that we're gonna fight under, I don't care. Whatever you
want. There's chairs. I'm sure I can get a frying pan in. You can spray paint the bottom so it looks hot. Yeah,
cast iron on cast iron. Yeah.
Everybody stay tuned.
I don't want to fight you.
The only rule is, you know, you can't...
I'm gonna fuck you up, dog. The only rule is
you can't do anything New Jack wouldn't do.
That's a terrible, terrible rule.
Did you just watch the fucking Mad... Oh my god, I've been fucking watching New Jack since I was 4 years fucking old. I was getting the ECW tapes and you fucking new motherfuckers. Gatekeeping needs to come back. Get your head in the toilet.
Hey, Bat Eater, can we fight? Can I
You're a girl. You can't fight men.
No, that's sexist.
Leagues won't allow it unless Bat Eater wants to be trans.
Yes, do that.
If Mint's trans, she can't place. In a fight.
Or Mint could be temporarily trans.
No, for real. I'll change my fucking license like Vito did if it means... Because you know some shit. Like, whenever she was over, I have a heavy bag in my office. And I was like, yeah, we should get some footage for the music video. Just, you know, punch the heavy bag or whatever. Mint was like, hey, can I try it out? I was like, yeah, sure. I was holding the heavy bag for it. She throws this kick up and, like, it flicks my wrist into my jaw. And it felt like a shot. Like, it was through three layers of separation. I was like, all right, well, I'm just going to play it off.
Mint's got them kicks, yo. She's all about the kickiness.
I love my kickiness.
But that fucking sucked.
But we got to fight to decide who can actually officially whoop each other's
ass. But anyway.
She could whoop my ass for sure.
So stay tuned for that. Maybe we'll do a Yig Studio fight.
Or not.
Maybe I'll get some dick show people involved. It'd be so great to set up Vito and Tony. I wish they would fight. Tony's down, but Vito's not.
That's not
You're
surprising.
Fucking dead, bird.
Tony would destroy Vito, though. Tony has a vicious spirit.
Well, that's...
Vito
Tony has a vicious spirit.
Vito has a limp spirit.
Vito is a sheep herder, and Tony is a wolf.
I'll escrow for Vito, and if he doesn't do it, I'll whoop his ass
Vito's
myself.
One of my favorite people. I can't wait to have him on this show.
I hate him so fucking much, it hurts. Like, no, I'm not even one of those guys that hates him because, like, well, he says this on the internet, or he blocks. It's literally just the voice and mannerisms. It's so unpleasant to listen to the whole... And you know, dude, like,
the
it's just
universe.
One of them things you gotta learn. Like, it's fucking,
you do a really
I just want
to. Imitation of him, actually.
No, he doesn't even say it with that much. His biggest problem. Like, he does the fucking worst app.
When I first heard that, I thought it was part of the song, and it was only in listening to the show, like, last week, I realized Vito does that every time.
You don't got a big dick Patreon-y? You're not watching it live like the rest of us?
No, I'm not.
You don't have to be a Patreon to watch The Biggest Problem live.
Oh, okay, you're probably right. I'm blowing my money for nothing.
No, that's a good idea. Everybody give Dick Masterson your money. Everybody, patreon.com/thedickshow. The Sean album. You're doing a deluxe, right? Let's talk about that real quick.
Oh, by the way, while you're out there giving money, my band camp, Bad Eater Music, check it out. Sean album. It's beautiful. I actually had one or two stories prepared for the show because I didn't want to just come on and dead air the shit out of it. I had like one or two bits planned, like whenever you came over to the apartment where I was just going to alienate you and act as like autistic as possible.
Like, yeah, this gets too weird. I'm going to leave.
I know, but you didn't have any incentive really to be there. You could have just scrapped the music video and been like, this guy's a spurg. And I would have been like, no, I was doing a bit, but it wouldn't have fucking, anyways, the fucking album, right? So, I wanted to just have a little 2 minute say on it. I fucking made the dance Sean song by fucking accident, and I'm sorry. I understand that it was funny for like 5 minutes, and then all of a sudden everybody's yelling, Sean, do the dance at the live show. Don't interrupt the shows, please. Don't get yourself in trouble. But fucking my dumbass, I fucking made that song to try and get Dick to turn it off. Because what Dick does in like every couple of episodes, he'll have someone send in a bit or a song. And if it's just falling flat, he'll keep it in up until the point where he goes, all right, all right, all right, all right. And then he'll press the button to like turn it off or whatever.
Yeah.
And if you've ever sent something in and he's done that to something you've sent in, like a voicemail or anything, it's the worst feeling in the world. You feel like, oh, I worked real hard on that. I made a joke. So I was like, what if I just make something that he has no choice but to do that for, and I won't feel bad about it? Because, and then he played the whole fucking thing and then made an NFT contest around it. And then we made an album, and then the album hit number one on hip hop charts in my home state. And I think briefly hip hop chart, number one hip hop charts on Bandcamp the day it came out, because it got 2000 listens the day it came out. And then they played it as an opener for the live show, and we shot a music video for it. And now I'm talking with someone that I fucking grew up watching, and I don't understand all these left turns that happen, but it's fucking ridiculous.
People make stuff.
Yeah. Meet people, make shit.
I was trying to get you on it, and I wanted to get Hardman working hard on it. And you can ask Riley about this. I was so fucking pussy about asking certain people to be on the album. I had to get Riley to get in contact. Yeah, to help me get Kendall on, even though I made beats for Kendall a couple of years ago. I don't know what it is, but I've always kind of viewed like this hierarchy in like creatorship, where for me to ask Hardman Working Hard to come on this album, in my dumb fucking brain was the same thing as if I was like, what if I tried to get Lil Wayne on this album? Like, it just that kind of separation of me to that
person. I mean, honestly, you shouldn't even look at it like you are that separated from Lil Wayne. I've been like really like thinking about the last couple days, like having a realization, like, man, if I had gotten into hip hop when I was like 20, or even when I first got into it when I was 22, like, I should have tried to become Missy Elliott's apprentice. Just like find her. She don't live that far away. She's, you know, she's still doing stuff, and like obviously works with lots of young talent, and like, I don't know, she'd probably fuck with my stuff because I was hugely inspired by her. I would have nothing but positive things to say to her. So like, you know, and it's just like that wouldn't have even occurred to me back then. But like, that's how Aaliyah got famous. She, you know, found a way to work at it.
Yeah, but Aaliyah was blowing R. Kelly the whole time.
R. Like, Kelly found her for some reason. Like, if you're talented in putting yourself out there, you keep finding yourself around other people. And a lot of those people are going to try to take advantage of you. And like, a lot of my aversion to like being a part of the industry or anything mainstream is because of the fact that I know it is devised to grind you out and spit you out unless you are
not unless
like really know what you're not doing and really in charge of your own career.
Yeah.
You know? Well,
there's nothing wrong with that either.
Yeah. Never mind. It is built to grind you and spit you out. Yeah.
Labels feel no guilt taking your money. That's the reason that my people been tired of rapping. I feel what you're saying.
Yeah, Medicare did a stream with Brandon Buckingham recently. Shout out Brandon, the homie, dude.
Yeah, hey, shout out Brandon. You said I have the same energy. I'm going to take that as a compliment. Bro, you do.
Doesn't he, you guys? Like a similar...
Yes. Got it. Down to the hair and everything.
Down to the hair. This is the guy with the ponytail. Yeah. What's wrong with you?
No. Dave has a ponytail.
I really don't want to fight him.
No, you don't
want
to fight him. When you see the music video, you're going to message me and go, I really don't want to fight him, because you're going to see him hitting the heavy bag with me behind him.
I can fight like Brandon Buckingham.
I don't want to fight him. I'm telling you.
Is that shot in there?
Right.
No, like the shot of me punching the heavy bag in that one is my favorite shot, because it's not even me doing anything with good form or throwing combos or anything like that. It was me just throwing, like, spamming overhand right as hard as I could.
Yeah.
Was it Dave holding the bag?
I was holding the bag, I think, when Riley went for it.
Okay, so it wasn't as hard as I could then, because if you just throw, like, a little bit of pressure on that thing, it knocks the fuck over. I put deer corn in it first to try and weigh it down, then I had to put sand in it, but
wild.
It's corn, you can, like, deer. Breathe on that.
Medicare said on his stream with Brandon recently that everyone on the internet, or maybe just famous people in general, have this like 5 to 10 year half-life where they're relevant, or where they're like, I always have viewed this 10-year window of productivity to be like 22 to 32, where you could spend all of your time doing something and getting as good at it as you can, because after that, health has diminishing returns. You need to spend more time with family for your mental health. You need to spend more time not working on shit all day and not sleeping for your actual physical health. So the 5 year relevancy and the 10 year productivity window is like very helpful as abstract diagrams of like a timeline for doing something like this that I was subconsciously working on anyway. Anybody who's talking to me about this would know that what I consider myself to be doing right now is like pre-gaming, like this sort of 4 or 5 years that I'm on the internet. I've been working with Dick since 2019. Dick really got me into like the internet sphere that I'm in at all. Like I wouldn't care otherwise. I only really look into stuff from the Dick Show if it's not hip hop related. And my main focus outside of the Dick Show stuff is just hip hop. And it's been really interesting that I've been able to make these converge. Like, we've got a collab coming up with Big Gay. And I don't think I would know who Mr. Girl or Big Gay are without, like, the Dick Show indirectly. Like, Vito and Mr. Girl went to high school.
Shit, I didn't even know that.
In Massachusetts. So that's how Mr. Girl eventually ended up in this sphere. I found out about him a couple years ago from Vito doing a video with him when he moved to L.A. because they were old friends. Now Mr. Girl's like a badass rapper that we're doing this remix of his I Kill Pedophiles song. We're doing that remix with Big Gay. And that's going to be a fucking a blast of a little Cypher song. I had always not understood that I could kind of take these two autistic interests of mine, the Dick Show and like internet comedy and like music, and I could make them one thing. It's just important to find a way to bring that into real life. And so now that Medicare has laid out sort of that idea that you have 5 years of fame, I'm really like focusing on this front 5 years being like working on stuff. Obviously, like if something went viral that we were making, Mint had some video catch the algorithm and pushed us over 1,000 subs recently.
Yeah, it was my Surf's Up review.
See, and it just got 2,000 views in a day for no reason.
Oh, yeah, I finished that.
Yeah, Mint Madness.
Thank you. It was a lot of hard work and not a lot of sleep.
Mint Madness. Yeah, congratulations.
But we kind of have to continue it if we want our channel to not just stop growing. We have to continue making almost a video a day.
Well, that thing you were saying about like that 5 to 10 year gap, I think the number one thing you have to learn in that one is learn a fucking instrument.
Right, yeah.
And not just an instrument, but learn a skill. Learn something that by the time your relevancy ends, like if you're in a rock band, fucking murder your ability to play the fucking guitar so by the time it's over, you can be a session musician. Like, it's the same thing with editing, fucking just guidance, anything you can fucking do in that 10-year period. But it's like if you go to, this is going to be a weird analogy, but if you go to prison and you don't take advantage of those little collegiate courses you have in there, you just did all that time for nothing.
Yeah, I was so close to being an idea guy because I can't like draw and I didn't have like the time or opportunity to learn to draw. And then it's like, well, I met Mint and now we can work together and we can produce like comic books. That's what we want. That's what we're working on this year. Our big like running behind the scenes thing we're doing is some comic stuff because that's where we want our careers to go. Mint.
Yes. It also definitely helps to have Riley have ideas because I spent all my time learning how to draw anatomy and stuff, but I didn't spend any of the time producing my own ideas until I was a teenager. And by the time that came around, then it kind of sucks. Well, but I appreciate ideas.
Because like being an idea guy is a bad thing, right? So it's like helpful that you and I are now like a writer artist duo because it's not like me being an idea guy, like a guy with ideas that, oh, if only someone could do this. Like that's how I view a lot of people online, especially. But like, so with Trixie and with the Void Gazers and with like that whole year in VA Beach, I was like, I didn't know how to edit and I stubbornly didn't take time to learn to edit. So it was like kind of Mint and Trixie doing everything video production wise. And I mean, I was scheduling trips and stuff and we'd go get a lot of footage and a lot of footage that I can't edit. So I'm just like watching them do it. And it really made me feel useless and stupid. So like I taught myself how to edit since last June or whatever.
It's the most empowering thing about knowing how to edit is that I think I kept like trying to impart onto you is like that, you know,
how to film it, like how to do all of it
already.
Like,
as you're
crazy. It's different.
Exactly. Like, cause we would go out and get this stuff and you would often be like, what are you going to do with this? And I'm like, I know, like I already have the format in my head, you know, like, cause I knew exactly, like, particularly with Void Chasers, like just from the amount of footage we had, I was like, there's basically 15 usable minutes from each single thing we did that I could cut down to like 10 and that will be each segment. And so like I was filming stuff under the thought that each segment will be 10 minutes long. Let's make sure there's that amount of like, you know, footage for this scene. So like there was some method to the filming just in the thought of what the edit should look like in the end, you know? And I think you've picked up on that pretty quickly when you started editing and you were like, oh, this makes the whole thing so much easier.
Yeah, well, it's so important to have that bankable skill because I can just be an editor in the future, right? Like,
just the ability to do it as fast as I can is like,
if every kid wants to be a fucking YouTuber, I'm just going to have a little brick and mortar print shop / production studio with a fucking podcast room. And I'm just going to like edit and mix and master and fucking upload it for you. And you're going to pay me. Like, that's my real life plan now. Because it's, like, viable. The internet shit's whatever. Like, it's fun to be able to live off of very little money in Kentucky and then just travel around and do whatever we want.
Next week in part 3, we will dive into Denzel Curry's most recent album and the Grammys. Do you want to scream into the void? Call 202-681-8643 and leave a voicemail and we'll play it on the show.